way to proceed? Please.
Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Brian Vincent, on behalf of the state of Hawaii, may it please the court, I'd like to reserve 10 minutes for rebuttal.
Fine.
The state applied for certiorari, for a writ of certiorari in this case because we believe that this court's holding or interpretation of Hawaii Revised Statute Section 291E61B is in conflict with this court's holding in State v. Tafoya, and that intrinsic-extrinsic analysis in that case. We also believe that the ICA committed grave error in remanding, in reversing this case and not remanding it back for resentencing as a first offense. In response to a specific question that was set for supplemental briefing, the amendments in Hawaii Revised Statute Section 291E61B, Enact 71, effective January 1st, 2004, address the concerns expressed by the majority of this court in Dominguez, in State v. Dominguez, in one respect. In footnote 8 of the majority opinion in Dominguez, this court expressed its concern that if the prosecution were not obliged to allege the fact of prior convictions, the defendant would have no idea whether he was entitled to a jury trial. Act 71 deleted the felony sentence provided in Section 291E61B4 and created a separate felony habitual offender OVUI offense. Thus, the defendant now knows that when he is charged with Section 291E61, the maximum term of prison is 30 days and that he has no right to a jury trial. Conversely, when charged with Section 291E61.5, the defendant knows that he is charged with a felony and has a right to a jury trial. Consequently, Act 71 eliminates the concern of the majority in Dominguez that failure to allege prior convictions will infringe on a defendant's right to a trial by a jury. However, in other respects, I do not believe that Act 71 addresses the issues before us today. In Act 71, the legislator was preoccupied with the substantially different issue raised in State v. Shimabukuro. There are no statements in the committee reports that address the issue before us today, whether the condition of prior convictions or elements of the OVUI offense. For that reason, we stand by our arguments that the condition of prior convictions are a classic example of an extrinsic fact under Tafoya.
Vincent, in Dominguez, the majority of the court held that Section 291E61 was a substantial reenactment.
That's correct, Your Honor.
Substantial reenactment of what?
A substantial reenactment of the old habitual offender statute.
291.4.4?
That's correct, Your Honor.
I'm sorry, 291.4.
No, 291.4 is the ordinary OVUI statute. 291.4.4 was the habitual offender statute.
All right. With a number of prior convictions as articulated in 291.4.4 elemental?
I'm not contesting that they are not elemental.
Are you admitting that they are?
I am admitting that they are.
Well, that would seem to be in conflict with Tafoya by your logic, would it not?
Yes, it would, Your Honor, and I have no explanation for that. I think that it appears that the court this was addressed in footnote in Shimabukuro, where it noted that the legislature had included some language in the committee report and the passage of Section 291.4.4 when it was passed in 1995 that said that the element of prior convictions was already an element of the offense. And I think that the court in that case was clearly responding to the legislative intent in that case, rather than analyzing it under the Tafoya extrinsic analysis.
291.4.4 described the offense of habitual drunk driving, did it not?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
And so, Mr. Vincent, as you said now, and as Shimabukuro pointed out, that description of habitual drunk driving set forth elements that had to be proven by the prosecution. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And one of those elements, I guess, was three convictions within 10 years. Is that correct? And in Dominguez was charged under 291.4.4.
That's correct.
And 291.4.4 was clear on its face that it applied to habitual drunk driving.
That's correct.
So in the old charge against Dominguez, the old charge itself recited that he was being charged with having three prior convictions in 10 years.
Right, right.
So that there was no question in Dominguez that Dominguez himself was appropriately warned of what the charge was. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And so there was no issue in Dominguez about what elements had to be proven. Isn't that true?
That's correct.
So that in Dominguez, looking at the facts in the record, there was no need to go beyond 291.4.4.
I believe so, yes.
But the majority went ahead and construed 291.4.4 with 291-4. Is that correct? Well, assuming it's correct, 291-4 lists three, I guess they amount to petty misdemeanors.
That's correct, Turner.
And each one of those offenses contains a different length of imprisonment upon conviction. Isn't that correct?
That's correct.
So Dominguez himself, though, was not subject to that provisions. Is that correct?
No, he was a third-time offender. Fourth-time offender. He had three prior convictions.
And 291E61, Section 1 through 3, in effect, contain those three misdemeanor sentences.
That's correct.
And 291E-61 B4 referred to the same offense as contained in 291.4.4.
That's correct.
And 291E-61 B4 expressly said that B4 was a Class C felony. So, in this case, we're not talking about the Class C felony, are we?
No, this is a second offense. There's one prior. We're alleging one, or we actually proved at trial that there was one prior conviction.
So we're talking about that provision in 291-4 and 291E-61. B1 through 3.
Right, that's correct.
And the majority in Dominguez said that you had to, I'm sorry, that the sentencing provisions in 291E, B1 through 3, had to be treated as elements of those misdemeanors. Isn't that correct?
They said that, this court said that B1 through B4, the condition of prior convictions had to be elements.
And as you point out in footnote 3 of your supplemental brief, that was so this court could say that 291.4.4 was substantially similar to 291E B4.
Right.
So now, based on what the majority said, we're talking in this case, about the misdemeanor statutes.
Correct.
And didn't the majority advise them that when the misdemeanor violations are concerned, they were to be treated as elements?
They did, Your Honor.
And was that followed in this case?
Your Honor, what happened in this case is we alleged the OVUI offense, and then at the end said, as a second offense. What the defendant alleges was defective about the charge was that we did not say second offense within 5 years. That's the defect that is at issue in this case.
Do you concede, Mr. Vincent, that the prosecution was at least attempting
Yes.
to treat the number of prior convictions as elemental in the articulation of its oral charge?
That's correct, and because we were aware of, at that time we were aware of Dominguez, and we were following the clear instructions of this court in Dominguez.
So what's the compelling justification for overturning Dominguez?
We believe that in the petty misdemeanor OVUI statute, there is no legislative history that we can find that would indicate that the fact of a prior conviction is an element. And on the contrary, we would argue that the extrinsic analysis would argue against it being treated as an element. We're essentially asking you to treat the felony offense different than the petty misdemeanor offenses. I'd like to address one argument that was made in the defendant's supplemental brief. There, the defendant compares OVUI to the felon in possession of a firearm offense. And that's HR section 134.7b. However, when you examine the two statutes, the felon in possession offense is readily distinguishable from the OVUI offense. In the felon in possession offense, the fact of the prior conviction renders what is otherwise a legal act, that is, possessing handgun, an illegal act. Thus, the prior conviction is intrinsic to the finding of guilt in that charge. Whereas in the OVUI offense, the fact of a prior conviction renders or merely enhances a sentence for what is otherwise, in and of itself, a legal act, or an illegal act, that is, operating a vehicle under the influence of an intoxicant.
Assuming, Lord forbid, you know, that you're unsuccessful in persuading us to overrule Dominguez, and so you're stuck with it. For purposes of the intrinsic-extrinsic analysis, does it matter whether an offense is a status offense or a recidivist offense?
I think not. I think that the redefinition of the term prior conviction that was affected by Act 71 is not determinative of whether or not prior conviction is an element. The redefinition of the term prior conviction in Act 71 basically makes it so that rather than being determined, whether how many prior convictions the defendant has at the time of sentencing, the court will determine how many convictions the defendant has at the time of the offense.
Understanding that difference,
mm-hmm.
Addressing the matter of intrinsic versus extrinsic, which is different, does it matter, given Dominguez, whether a statute is denominated a status offense or a recidivist offense?
I think it doesn't matter in terms of, I don't think it affects the intrinsic-extrinsic analysis.
But it does affect the number of prior convictions that remain operative at the time of conviction, potentially.
That's correct.
So is your basic argument only that convictions are normally considered extrinsic to an offense, and therefore prior convictions are a sentencing factor and should not be considered elements?
That's correct.
And that's your basis for requesting Dominguez to be overturned?
That's correct, Your Honor. As the United States Supreme Court noted in Almendarez-Torres versus United States.
So it wouldn't matter whether you said second offense or not?
That's correct.
So your argument is that you shouldn't have to allege or charge a second offense?
That's correct.
And how is the defendant then to know under what provision or what his jeopardy is?
A prior conviction is the fact that should uniquely be known by the defendant. The defendant must have been in court on the date he received a prior conviction. We think that that's sufficient notice. We believe that's sufficient notice. Put him on notice of the fact that he might be sentenced for as a repeat offender. Similar to what would happen in, I think, Section 706.605, the repeat offender statute and the enhanced sentencing statutes. We would ask this court to address the issue whether or not there's sufficient evidence to support this conviction. And if this court decides that the fact of a prior conviction is not is an element of the offense, we'd ask that it be remanded back for sentencing as a first offense, Your Honor, for the lesser included offense of OVUI as a first offense.
On that matter, Mr. Vincent, let me back up a little. Expressing your backup position, are you assuming that we have not overruled Dominguez?
I'm assuming that it has not been overruled at this point.
If we have not overruled Dominguez, then was the oral charge as articulated in the district court in this case not defective?
We didn't raise that issue to the ICA, so we concede for purposes of this hearing that it was defective.
That
it was defective. If it's an element.
If the charge was defective, then was the court not jurisdictionally barred from convicting the defendant of anything?
I believe the statute provides for conviction of a lesser included offense.
I'm aware of included offense analysis, but is it not a necessary precondition to a vacate and remand with instructions to enter judgment of conviction of an included offense that at least some offense was properly charged in the first place?
Yes, and we did charge, we did sufficiently charge OVUI as a first offense. And the only thing that would differ between a charge as a first offense and a second offense is just adding the words second offense within 5 days.
Those words were there. And so how could that oral charge be construed as a charge alleging no prior conviction?
My answer to that is I point to Shimabukuro itself. And in that case, the defendant was charged under the old habitual offender statute, 291-4.4. And this court remanded the case back to the trial court for sentencing under 291-4, And I'm not sure if...
But was it not the case in Shimabukuro, by the narrowest of majorities, as the holding may have squeaked through, that the original charge charged, adequately charged, an offense?
The charge that was charged to the defendant in this case...
I mean in Shimabukuro.
Right, okay. I don't know what the exact arraignment language was in Shimabukuro. And I think that in... I would guess that in Shimabukuro, the arraignment would have been much more different to the charge that he was originally sentenced under than in this case, where it's...
Well, at least it's my recollection that we weren't faced in Shimabukuro with a defective charge in the first instance.
Yes, in Shimabukuro the issue was the defendant had set aside, had his conviction set aside.
Right. Right. And I gather we've agreed that it makes a difference whether the charge is defective in the first instance or not for purposes of whether you can resort to included offense analysis.
I think that, I believe that the lesser, I mean, it just seems, I guess the prosecutor in this case, the DPA on the trial was in a dilemma in this case. He was instructed by Dominguez to charge the second offense.
I get it. What we have here is an instance in which the prosecutor was trying to comply with Dominguez. He may have failed. If he failed, the charge was defective. So the question is, can you take a charge that charges nothing and transform it into a charge that had the other one been properly articulated, would allege an offense included within what was not properly alleged?
I believe that, for example, in a theft statute, if the state charges a defendant with theft of object that was worth more than the statutory limit for say second degree robbery, this court can still remand. If they find that the statute, the money amount is not met, then they can remand it back for...
Well, in Shimabukuro, there wasn't any disagreement that you saw among all the opinions that the defendant could be convicted of drunk driving. Is that correct? And in Shimabukuro, the defendant had entered a conditional plea of guilty as to the drunk driving charge. Do you recall that?
I don't recall that fact, but I'm assuming.
Well, in this case, if you excise the term second offense from the charge, are you saying that what remains would be sufficient to charge drunk driving?
That's correct.
Therefore, that the case can be remanded for entry of a judgment for drunk driving?
That's correct, Your Honor.
But what doctrine are you relying on? Any case that you have for that?
There's another ICA case which I cited in my...
The cases that say if you wrongly charge, then the charge is defective, and so that's a violation of due process and the conviction is reversed. Here we're talking about a charge that's correct insofar as driving under the influence is concerned, but contains an additional element that is insufficiently alleged.
That's correct.
So is that a difference?
I think it's a distinction without a difference.
Let me pose you a hypothetical, which is sort of a riff on one of our earlier cases, but a more extreme illustration. Suppose the state is undertaking to charge a defendant with assault in the first degree, and the charge reads, on or about such and such a day in the city and county of Honolulu, the defendant inflicted injury on the complainant, thereby committing the offense of assault in the first degree. That would be a defective charge, would it not?
That's correct. And I would argue a defective charge as to the assault in the first degree charge.
And let's assume hypothetically that the matter went to trial because the motion to dismiss on the basis of a defective indictment was denied, and the defendant was convicted of assault in the first degree because the prosecution was successful in proving up serious bodily injury, and the defendant appealed. Could this court vacate the conviction of assault in the first degree and remand to the circuit court with instructions to enter a judgment of conviction as to an included offense?
I believe that if the state did not want to, I believe that it could. I don't
believe Jen Drush and its progeny are out the window.
I didn't examine those cases in light of this.
Those are the ones that Justice Acoba was alluding to, that held that when you have a defective charge, there's no charge at all, and a conviction cannot result from it as a matter of due process.
I can't comment on that.
May it please the court, Deputy Public Defender Taryn Tomasa on behalf of Philip K. Cueva, respondent appellant in this case. As conceded by the state, the subsequent amendments to the DUI statute had no effect on the applicability of Dominguez on this instant case. And because there has been no substantive change in the law, and I don't believe any compelling reasons put forth by the state, the ICA's decision must be affirmed based on the analysis and holding in Dominguez. The state addressed...
What about the fact that in Dominguez, there really was no question of due process violation, since 291-4.4 was clear on its face that it was a Class C felony and contained the elements, and 291E61B4 clearly said that an offense where the defendant was convicted of three convictions in a 10-year period was a Class C felony. So in Dominguez, there was no question about whether or not there was a due process violation. So would that be a basis for at least overturning part of Dominguez?
You're true in that the defense did not raise a claim of a due process violation in Dominguez. However,
nobody raised it.
Correct. I believe that was the basis for the majority's holding, however. And
no, there was a basis for the dissent. The majority said there was a due process violation.
Yeah. Correct. And we would still argue, however, that the due process rights are still affected by the accused for the petty misdemeanor offenses, because the crime, the penalties still increase, although they're
all classified. That's this case.
Yes.
That's this case.
Yes.
Right. Because the facts in this case fit into that box of petty misdemeanor.
Yeah.
But Dominguez wasn't concerned with petty misdemeanors. So Dominguez and all of those defendants who are similarly situated were affected, though, by Dominguez.
Correct.
And this court has said that if a prior conviction is not good, that can be considered later on, even if the defendant's been sentenced and convicted. So would that be a reason for overturning Dominguez?
I'd still resort and say the same thing, that no, it wouldn't be compelling enough. And
I think Justice Acoba's question at least touches on what you might reasonably infer the reason was for this court requesting supplemental briefing on the question whether the Dominguez analysis is still viable in light of amendments to 291E61 that became effective after Dominguez was handed down. And if I read the supplemental briefs of both the prosecution and the defendant correctly, the parties are in agreement that the Dominguez analysis is unaffected by subsequent amendments. Do I have that wrong?
I believe you're correct. And then I guess it would be whether there were compelling reasons to overturn Dominguez, and we come right back around. And it's the defense's position that the Dominguez's analysis and holding is still good law and should be applied to this case. And I believe that there's still the due process concerns because there is the gradations within the petty misdemeanor offense. And the mere fact that they are petties doesn't lessen the defendant's due process rights to know exactly what he's charged with and what the potential penalties he could incur as a result of a conviction. I'd now like to turn to the last topic that the court was talking about with the state regarding remanding this for for resentencing as a first offense. And it's the defense's position that it cannot be remanded because it was a defective charge, that we're now at a point where it's jurisdictionally barred because of the defect in the charge. And I believe that there was, that Justice Levinson had given a hypothetical that was strikingly similar to the Spratling case, in which it was they didn't fully allege all of the elements for an assault charge. I believe it was assault in the third degree. It was injury versus bodily injury, and the result of the Spratling case was that the defendant was already sufficiently put on notice that he had done an adequate defense. And the main point of the Spratling case was that there was a different standard of review because it was a plain error case, that the defense did not raise this at the lower court, so it wasn't adequately preserved. So it was under a more strict, I believe, MOTA rule review, in which the defense was compelled to show prejudice on the appellate court level. In this particular case, however, it was preserved at the trial court level, and so it wouldn't be such an onerous standard of review, and the defense position would be that because it was a defective charge, it did not allege all of the elements which the state had conceded it was trying to charge Mr. Kekuava with a second offense, that it cannot be remanded to the district court for sentencing as a first. In addition, I believe the state also stated that the discussion regarding the prior convictions in Dominguez constituted dicta. And as set forth in our supplemental briefing.
Where they said that?
I'm sorry?
Do you know where the state said that? Dicta?
If you give me a minute, I can look it up.
Oh, but it's okay. That's right.
But I believe that's what one of their assertions were for overturning Dominguez, that it was dicta. But The defense position is that the discussion regarding the priors cannot constitute dicta, that the majority relied upon the prefatory language of B1 through B4 in reaching its holding, and that without reliance upon that discussion, that the majority could not have reached the result that it did, which was that the 291E61 was a substantial reenactment of the previous.
There could never have been any confusion about mixing up the three conviction, 10-year felony with the prior misdemeanors, because that section specifically said this section constitutes a Class C felony.
Correct. I believe there was also in the state's petition for certiorari and also in their supplemental briefing reference to Dominguez being contrary to federal precedent and federal law. And at this point, I'd just like to distinguish that the cases that the state had set forth, they do not deal with a status offense such as this type of statute. And in addition, that the Apprendi case that the state cited to say that prior convictions are traditionally sentencing factors and everything but a prior should be placed before the trier of fact, that Apprendi actually endorsed the rule that it's unconstitutional for the legislature to remove from the jury the assessment of facts that increase the penalty beyond the prescribed range of the statute. And in this particular case, this statute doesn't involve penalties that exceed the statutory maximum, that we're talking about the penalties within the particular statute. And it appears from the legislature's crafting of the statute as well as the majority's analysis in Dominguez that that's exactly what was the intent here, that the prior convictions be elements of defense and be brought before the trier of fact to determine.
Well, I don't want to get into a protracted discussion of Cunningham v. California. That might be a little premature, but at least it's clear as of Cunningham v. California that any aggravator other than the fact of a prior conviction or something admitted by the defendant is elemental and therefore must be alleged in the charging instrument and proved to the trier of fact beyond a reasonable doubt. If we have an unusual statute here in which the fact of a prior conviction is elemental, then there really is no distinction between the general Cunningham rule and what we've got before us, is there?
I'm not prepared to address the Cunningham case. The defense would also say that if this court does decide to overturn Dominguez, that the new interpretation cannot be applied to Mr. Kekueva under Bowie versus City of Columbia, and as recognized by this court in State v. Ikizawa. In Bowie, the U.S. Supreme Court held that the retroactive application of a judicially announced change in the law to the defendant in that case violated due process. And I believe that this court also recognized Bowie in the Supreme Court's notation that an unforeseeable judicial enlargement of a criminal statute applied retroactively would operate similar to an ex post facto law and would result in injustice. Here, if the court changes its direction and overturns Dominguez, it would be an abrupt change of law and should not be applied to Mr. Kekueva in light of his substantial reliance upon it. It wasn't foreseeable that the Dominguez case would be overturned so quickly. It was filed in 2005, and Kekueva's decision came down in the ICA in 2006. And by construing the priors as sentencing elements, as sentencing factors versus elements, it lessens the state's burden by eliminating an element of the offense. And so we would submit that by applying a new interpretation retroactive to Mr. Kekueva, it would result in an injustice to him. And we are asking that the ICA decision be affirmed, that the ICA decision is squarely on point with Dominguez, and that precedent should carry the case. There have been no changes in the law that would affect the applicability of the analysis and the holding. And vacating Dominguez based on the foregoing argument that occurred would penalize the ICA, the defense, the respondent for just following precedent. And so we ask that the ICA's decision be affirmed, and if the court chooses to disregard or disagree with respondents' arguments, that I believe there's still a sufficiency of the evidence issue that still needs to be determined. And if there isn't any more questions by the court?
The sufficiency of the evidence issue, what is your claim on that?
I'm sorry?
What is the claim on the insufficiency of evidence as the record indicates? Did he fail the sobriety test?
I believe the police officer's testimony indicated that he did not pass at least two of the tests, if not three. It was the police officer's subjective interpretation of the field sobriety test.
So he failed?
According to the police officer's subjective opinion.
And so, I mean, what evidence is missing here?
Well, if we look at all of the facts that were listed at the trial court level, it was late in the evening. The defendant did dispute that he was actually driving the vehicle at the time of the traffic violations, which was, I believe, speeding either 80 or 88 miles an hour in a 35 mile an hour zone. He did have indicia with the red eyes, slurred speech, but as the opening brief had indicated that it was late at night, he had been awoken abruptly by who he claimed was the passenger of the vehicle to switch seats with him, that he had spent most of the day at the beach, and I believe that the slurred speech that the officer was relying upon was the defendant's uttering, and so that sounded slurred. And so I'm not sure how much deference you can put on a slurred word of,
Essentially, your position is he wasn't driving?
Yes, that was the defense at trial. Thank you.
Counsel, what was your support for your statement that Dominguez shouldn't be overruled? You said overruled Dominguez. What was the support for that?
This course, extrinsic analysis in Tafoya.
Did you indicate that because this is a petty misdemeanor case, I mean, that's a difference that you're looking at
That's correct. It's different. I think it always was intended to be treated as different. No, Your Honor. Any further questions?
Proceed. How much time does he have? 2 minutes. Thank you very much. We'll take this matter under advisement.